Chapter 36. Louise. He's a little brown nut, my baby boy. Maybe not so little. He's grown. Even though it's late and he's barely awake, I can see how tanned and healthy he is, and I very nearly cry as he runs into my arms and hugs me tightly. My one good thing.
I got you this, Mummy.
He holds up a keyring with a small shell trapped in clear resin adorning it. It's a cheap seaside souvenir, but I love it. I love that he chose it for me.
Oh my gosh, thank you. It's beautiful. I'll put my keys on it first thing in the morning. Now, why don't you take your bag into your bedroom while I say goodnight to Daddy?
See you soon, soldier, Ian says.
And then, when Adam's wheeled his little Buzz Lightyear suitcase away, he smiles at me.
You're looking good, Lou.
Have you lost some weight?
A bit.
I'm glad he's noticed. But although I may be looking slimmer, I'm not sure good is a word I'd have chosen for how I appear today. A night of no sleep while tossing and turning and thinking about David and Adele's fucked up lives, my own hurt heart and my self-pity, and my lack of a job, has left me looking washed out.
Ah, I probably shouldn't have brought you these then.
He holds up a bag, two bottles of French red wine and several cheeses. Always welcome, I say with a tired grin as I take it. I don't tell him I've lost my job. That can wait for a while. And I'm going to have to make up some lie to cover it. There's no way I can tell him the truth. I don't want to make him think we're now on some even moral ground. He cheated on me, and now I've slept with a married man. I'm definitely not giving him that. I'll say my new boss had his own secretary or something. That's the thing I'm learning about affairs. They breed lies.
You better get off, shouldn't you? I say. Lisa must be knackered in the car.
Their delayed Eurostar has meant it's nearly midnight. They should have been home by 9.
Yeah, she is.
He looks momentarily awkward and then adds,
Thanks for this, Louise. I know it's not easy.
It's fine, honestly, I say, waving him away. I'm happy for you, really. I can't decide if that's a lie or not, and I find that it's part lie, part truth. It's complicated. I do want him to leave, though. After the intensity of the past few weeks and days, I don't really have small talk in me, and this invading return of normality feels surreal. When he's gone, I get Adam into his pyjamas and squeeze him tightly, relishing the gorgeous smell of him while he sleepily mumbles tales of his time away, most of which I've heard on the phone. I don't mind. I feel as if I could listen to his chatter all night. I put a big plastic cup of water by his bed, and we talk for a little while as he gets drowsier and drowsier.
I missed you, Mummy, he says. I'm glad I'm home.
My heart melts then. I do have a life of my own. It might all be wrapped up in the package of this little boy, but I love him with all my heart, and that love is pure and clean and perfect. I missed you too, I say. Those words don't cover how I feel. Let's go up to Highgate Woods tomorrow if the weather's nice. Get some ice creams. Have some pretend adventures. Would you like that? He smiles and nods, but he's drifting off to his own world of sleep. I kiss him goodnight and watch him for a moment or two longer before turning the light out and leaving him. I feel utterly exhausted. Having Adam back has calmed me, and now there's just tiredness weighing me down. I pour a glass of the rich red wine Ian brought, and it eases the final dregs of my tension until I can't stop yawning. I try to let Adele and David float away. Adele has a phone. If she's in any real trouble, she can call. Unless, of course, she's too smashed off her face on whatever concoction of pills David has given her. But there's nothing I can really do. I've thought about calling Dr. Sykes, but who's he going to believe?
and I'm pretty sure that Adele would lie to protect David and herself. I can't understand why she still loves him, which she clearly does, when it seems pretty obvious to me that he's only there for her money. How much is she worth? How much has he spent? Maybe they've been together so long, Adele is mistaking dependency for love. It stings, too, that Adele said David had a thing with someone where they used to live. So much for all his, I don't do this, angst. It hurts, and I keep replaying how he was that awful night, so cold in what he said, a stranger. The other side to him, like Adele said. I let out a long sigh as if I can somehow expel them both from me. Adam is home now. I have to focus on him. Him and trying to get another job. Whatever Dr. Sykes says, I can't go back to the clinic. Even if David left, the place is too full of him now. Too full of all this for me ever to want to work there anymore. It wouldn't be the same. I do a half-hearted job search on the net. There's nothing suitable for me, and it makes me more miserable. Thank God I've got some savings in the bank to give me a few months' breathing space, but they won't last forever, and then I'll be back on Ian's charity. I want to curl up in a ball until it's all gone away. Instead, I drain the glass and then head to bed. Adam's back and there'll be no more lions for me. I fall asleep quickly. These days the night terrors are barely there. I'm in for a second or two, check my fingers, and then the Wendy door appears and I'm gone. As has become habit, I'm in the garden by the pond, and Adam is there with me, and although we're trying to have fun, it's a grey, drizzly day, as if, even in the dream I'm controlling, my emotional mood has a say. I know the dream is all only a fantasy, and the fantasy isn't living up to much with just the two of us here. David is not barbecuing tonight. I don't want him there. Not with his, if you know what's good for you, you'll stay away from both of us, so clear in my head. I'm by the pond, but Adam has got distracted from the abundance of tadpoles and fish by the toy cars and trucks that are strewn over the lawn, and he barely looks up. I know that I'm putting him there. If I want Adam by the pond with me fishing for treasure, then I only have to will it. But this also isn't the real Adam. Merely an imaginary creation of him. And tonight that's not enough. The real Adam is fast asleep in his own bed, tucked up under his duvet and cuddling Paddington. I think of him, sleeping so close to me, and picturing him there back in his room makes my heart glow. And I want to see him and hug him until he can barely breathe. I feel it with a mother's ferocity. And then, suddenly, there it is again. The second door. It's glowing under the pond's surface like before, but this time it moves, rising up to stand vertically. And although the edges are still shimmering mercurial silver, the door itself is made of water. I stay still, and it comes quickly towards me, and for a second, I think I can see tadpoles and goldfish swimming on the surface. And then I'm touching the liquid warmth and passing through it, and then I'm standing by Adam's bed. I feel momentarily dizzy with the change, but then the world settles. I'm in his bedroom. I can hear him breathing, slow and steady, the breathing of the very old or the deeply sleeping. One arm is over his face, and I think about moving it, but I don't want to disturb him. His duvet is half kicked off, and at some point he must have knocked his water over, and it's spilled all over poor Paddington, who's fallen out of bed. I'm glad it's a dream. Adam would hate that Paddington needs drying out. He won't even let me put him in the washing machine. I bend over to pick the bear up, but my hand can't grasp it. More than that, I can't see my hands. I look at where they should be. I have no hands. There's nothing there. Confused, I try three times to touch the bear with my invisible fingers, but with each attempt, I have the sensation of passing right through the soft, wet fur, as if I'm not there at all, as if I'm a ghost. And then I'm horribly unsettled, and I feel an enormous tug from behind as I'm yanked backwards. And for a brief moment, I'm terribly afraid, and then I wake up with a gasp, upright in my own bed, sucking in deep breaths of air. I feel jolted awake, like in those almost dreams of falling you get when on the cusp of sleep. My eyes dart around in the gloom, trying to shake my complete disorientation. I look down at my hands and count my fingers. 10. I do it twice before I'm sure that this time I truly am awake. My lungs feel raw, as if I've been out and smoked 20 cigarettes in the pub as in the days of old, but I don't feel tired. If anything, I feel weirdly energised given how emotionally battered I am and how tired I was when I went to bed. I'm thirsty, though. Desperately thirsty. Wine before bed. I'll never learn. I get up and creep to the kitchen and drain 2 glasses from the tap and then splash my face. My lungs return to normal, the rawness fading. Maybe it was just some echo of the dream. It's only 3 a.m, so I head back to bed, even though I'm not sure I'll get back to sleep. And I pause at Adam's door and look in and smile. He's definitely home. That part wasn't a dream. I'm about to close the door when the bear on the floor catches my eye. Paddington. Fallen out of bed. I frown and come in closer. The plastic cup on the bedside table is on its side and empty. The bear is soaked. This time, I can pick Paddington up, and he's heavily sodden. I look at Adam, my heart starting to thump faster. One arm is over his face, and his legs are sticking out from the half-kicked-off duvet. It's like a moment of déjà vu. Everything is exactly as I saw it in my dream when I went through the second door. But that can't be right. I can't have seen it. I was in a dream. But I couldn't have known that he'd spilled his water and soaked his bear, and that his arm was over his face. I wouldn't have imagined those things. Adam is the soundest sleeper I know. He normally barely even moves, but stays curled up on his side all night. None of this is anything I would have pictured if I was thinking of Adam sleeping. I don't know what to think. I can't make any sense of it. And then it strikes me. I must have sleepwalked. It's a small moment of relief, of logic, and I cling to it even though it doesn't feel true. I haven't done that one since I started the lucid dreaming. But that must be what happened. Maybe I was sleepwalking and half woke up or something. Saw the room, then went back to sleep and carried it into my dream. When I realise there's no point in standing there staring any longer, I go back to bed and look up at the ceiling for a while. The whole thing has unsettled me, although I'm not sure why. The way I couldn't touch the bear, my invisibility, that never happens in my new dreams. I can eat, drink, fuck, whatever. How come I couldn't pick up Paddington? How come I didn't have hands? It's weird. And it wasn't like the other dreams. Despite my lack of body, the dream itself felt more solid, more real. I must have been sleepwalking, I tell myself over and over. I mean, what other explanation can there be?